From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on October 12, 2012, on the website Gawker. Have you ever tangled with a troll on Twitter or online and said to yourself, who is this person? In real life, who would write something so awful? Well, Gawker had set out to unmask what they called the biggest troll on the internet. He was a serial poster on Reddit who went by the handle Violent Acres, self-described as Reddit's creepy uncle. Violent Acres was, well, he was more than creepy. He was the creator of endless streams of racism, underage children in very little clothing, misogyny, gore, just for starters. Gawker reporter Adrian Chen wanted to find out who Violent Acres was in real life. Well, the phone rang on a Wednesday afternoon at the office of a Texas financial services company, and a man named Michael Brutch answered. Chen explained that he had uncovered Brutch as Violent Acres, and Brutch responded, "It's amazing how much you can sweat in a 60-degree office," and laughed a little. He was 49 years old. He loves cats. He's married. Lives in a suburb of Dallas. His wife was disabled. And he begged the reporter not to publish the story. No dice. This was a vicious troll, Gawker said, pushing violent and horrifying images. The real person has to eventually be held accountable. And so here's a question. Does Twitter go far enough in policing its content? Do social media sites? Should it police its own content at all? The actor Leslie Jones briefly quit Twitter this summer when she was flooded with racist attacks. Where should the line be? And how should we, if we're going to be on social media, deal with people who we think are kind of trolls, kind of rude? Dealing with trolls is just one subject that will be discussed at the annual Upstate Social Sessions tomorrow at the School of the Arts in Rochester. And some of the organizers and panelists are with us this hour. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests. Leah Stacey is the conference organizer and editor-in-chief and co-founder of Boomtown Table, and a fixture on social media locally, but not a troll. Leah, welcome to you.
Thank you.
though no stranger to how trolls can behave, I'm
sure.
Oh,
no.
Nice to see you here. Steve Carter is also a conference organizer. He's a co-founder of Explore Rochester. Welcome back here, Steve.
Thank you again.
Aaron Rosell is a visiting assistant professor at St. John Fisher College, teaches courses in public relations and social media management. Welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
And on the phone with us is Rochelle Bylow. She's social media manager at Pinkney Hugo in Syracuse, and she has been a social media fixture in Western New York when it comes to food writing, all kinds of different things for years now. So, Rochelle, welcome back to the program to you.
Hi there. I wish I was there with you guys. Sounds like I'm missing out on a lot.
Well, it's a very busy day for us. And Randy Gorman is also someone who knows how to tangle with people. And actually, Randy's one of the nicer people ever find
on
Twitter.
I do not troll.
You do not troll.
I may observe quietly, but I do not troll.
Randy's here with a brief interlude into the conversation because we are at the start of what we hope is a very successful but a very important week, Randy.
And it's I always enjoy so much, Evan, when we talk about coming on to talk about the support that we want people to take part in here to be part of public radio and really part of our community, because Connections is such a good example of that. And not to embarrass Evan, but he's done a phenomenal job with the show, but he's also spending a lot of time and a lot of resources trying to bring you the show that you want to hear. Great topics, of course, the election, not the least of them. We've been doing a lot of coverage, not just what you hear on NPR, of course, but talking to people locally, how they are impacted by what's going on in presidential politics. And we'll talk about this more in the coming days and weeks, but Evan and his producer, Megan Mack, have been working for a year-long project on teacher diversity. You'll be hearing more about that very soon. And we need your support for that. You can call us to offer any kind of support, any amount of money, 454-6300. That's 454-6300. If you're out of the 585 area code, 1-800-295-9994. That's 1-800-295-9994. Or at WXXI.org, or, of course, on your mobile app. You can donate very easily from there as well. I hope everybody participates in the show just the way they do by calling and listening, by providing some support so we can keep doing the kind of fine work that we are doing with Connections all year long.
Thank you, Randy. I hope Connections listeners, if you're not, I want somebody who is not a member who listens as much as you can to the show to call right now, 454-6300. It would mean a lot to us being able to sustain what we do here. That's Randy Gorman. And let's talk now, not only about trolls, but that's just one of the many. I mean, so Leah Stacey, as the creator of this conference, what's the goal of the Upstate Social Sessions?
The goal is for people of all experiences on social media, or who are just curious about it, perhaps. Although I think we're all on it now in some form or another. Students, professionals, national and local, who want to improve or just come together and have a conversation, hashtag IRL, because we don't get to do that a lot when we work in social media. So IRL in real life. That's kind of our running joke at every meeting. Just everything is social media IRL for this. So yeah, the goal is to get everybody together and have that conversation offline. Of course, there's a lot that goes on online as well during it. But to offer some education, that's why the Brainery is such a big part of sponsoring it. And Danielle Ramo, who is the founder of Rochester Brainery, is actually the one who first came up with this idea, sent me a Facebook message because it couldn't be more cute than that. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. And then we brought Steve, I think was the third one to join the team. And then we also have Brianna Banford from Yelp Rochester. We have Dan Gribben, who works at Brand Networks. Justin Doucette is our fabulous graphic designer. And Sydney Bell is our scholarship coordinator. That's a new thing this year.
All right. So if you want to get involved, you still can for tomorrow's sessions.
Absolutely.
How do you do this? So on upstatesocialsessions.com, you can purchase tickets, or you could find one of the Facebook or Twitter or Instagram ads that we have going around right now. There's a bunch of them probably hitting everybody. so you can get the tickets from there. But that's tomorrow. Check-in starts at 9 and breakfast, and then sessions will get going shortly after that. You can see the schedule and everything on the website.
Okay, it's in Rochester.
Yeah.
At School of the Arts, yes?
Yeah. School of the Arts. For the second year, we really love working with them. They've been a great partner for this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what I want to kind of do is work through some of the themes here. And I picked the troll one to start because, you know, I think we're a few weeks away from an election and things are getting a little rough in certain places of certain corners of the internet. But really, that's not unique to election season. I mean, I mentioned Leslie Jones this summer. I mentioned Gawker's unmasking of the biggest troll on the internet. First of all, Aaron, should trolls be unmasked?
You were talking about the banning the eggs earlier.
Yeah, I joked. Can we ban Twitter eggs? And look, I know there's probably some eggs listening, and an egg is a term for somebody who doesn't have a picture or profile picture or an avatar, and that's fine. I don't mean to use that in a derogatory term. And I actually don't believe in banning Twitter eggs, but sometimes it feels super anonymous, and when people are anonymous, they feel more licensed to be vicious.
They do. I mean, the internet takes away that barrier. They can kind of hide behind the computer screen. And should they be unmasked? I mean, it depends on the extent of their nuisance, I suppose.
Yeah, in this case, the Gawker, and 4 years ago when they unmasked Violent Acres, he was saying, I could lose my job, my wife is disabled, we need the coverage. You know, do me a solid here and don't put this out there. If you were the reporter, would you have put that out there?
Yes, because I think that's just bad behavior, and you should know.
And that's better. Good journalism, too. Like, being able to uncover that, that's a good story. Gawker, RIP, though, but...
I know. It was an amazing story.
Yeah.
It was an amazing piece of journalism. Rochelle Bylow, should that reporter put that name out there? Should he have unmasked that troll?
Well, I think that's the job of a reporter, right? I mean, if the reporter's intention or goal was to protect someone's identity, I think maybe they were in the wrong job for themselves.
Well, I think that's fair, and I also think you've got plenty of times where people are sort of trolling, but you do see their names. In fact, I could recall when former Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling, his daughter got a college scholarship. She was going to play softball. Goodness, I mean, the sexist, vile remarks toward him from people on Twitter who did use their name. And so he decided, I'm going to figure out who you are in real life, and I'm going to call your boss. And we're going to talk about this. So I guess to some degree, I'm in favor of unmasking because I'm in favor of at least people being accountable for their behavior.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I know you're going to talk about is how to deal with the trolls or don't feed the trolls. But Aaron, where does it start for you? It doesn't always have to rise to the level of a Violent Acres, somebody who is posting maybe illegal, disgusting images, but people who can be really aggressive, really rude with you. We unfortunately bump into it sometimes. What are some of the ideas that we should have for dealing with that?
Well, it depends on the extent. Again, we were talking about this earlier. I had an experience with someone. I have worked in PR for a while, and I had a client who did an interview, and it was posted on a blog. And then he said kind of an off-the-cuff remark that came off wrong in the interview, a little bit out of context. And he got called out by some commenters, and I knew that it was coming. I was kind of counting down. I'm like, okay, 5, 4, there it is. And so I spoke to him, you know, as it was kind of happening and in real time and real life. And I said, you know, you should probably respond to this, because if you don't, it's going to keep going and it's going to get completely out of context. So, you know, give some information, give some backstory here. And as soon as he jumped in with his own voice and people recognized that he was real, and a real person with something real and legitimate to add to the conversation, they backed down. People actually apologized and said, oh, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes, given the situation, it's good to engage.
I agree with it. My own experience, even before Twitter and social media, I recall even working in commercial television news, people will say terrible things. Most of the terrible things that are said, I will say, go to women, female anchors, but sometimes to men. And sometimes you get vicious messages. People don't think that you're going to call them back. People don't think you're going to email them back. And when they do, they usually back off and say, oh, you know, I didn't know you were going to respond. So what you're saying is, at least start there.
Yeah, and that comes from listening, you know, listening to social media, monitoring. If you're not paying attention to the conversation and you're not engaging in it, people think that they can just continue to be rude or crude or vulgar, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. And then sometimes when you pop in and go, hey, actually, I'm paying attention. I'm right here, guys.
Yeah.
It can really change the course.
Yeah, you humanize it, yeah, when you do that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So agree there. Leah, and you want to add anything there in terms of the value of at least engaging, letting them know that you're a human being there?
Yeah, sometimes it becomes necessary. I agree with that. It varies. I teach a social media class as well, and we often talk about this because a lot of my students want to go into PR or social media right out of school. And they're still learning how to use Twitter and how to not tweet at 2 a.m. on the weekends. And so we're actually just about to start a whole part of the course that's all about comments and just humanizing it. Exactly, mm-hmm. what Steve said is so important. Remembering, like I always tell them, be a person. And remember that there's another person on the end of this. So sometimes even when we're trolled, our first reaction is to snap back. And I always try to just walk away and think, what, I don't know what's going on in this person's life. Why are they trolling me? What's the root of this? Mm-hmm. So I guess I put the responsibility more on myself sometimes to handle it.
Rochelle Bylow, you're someone who has been not only active in social media, but you've done some cooking demos and food writing videos for Syracuse.com in a past life, things like that. So people have had access and interaction with you in various ways. I suspect in your career you've seen some trolling or some ugly stuff, yes?
There has been some trolling in my past. I'm not the troller. I have been trolled. As you mentioned, I did used to write a cooking column for Syracuse.com, and I also wrote a book, which was a memoir of a period in my life when I fell in love and worked on a farm, and so you can imagine there was a lot of material there for trolling. Ultimately, the way I look at it is trolls are antisocial, right? They exhibit really antisocial behavior, which is funny because they're doing it on social media. and the way that I have chosen to interact with that is just thinking, how would I interact with that antisocial person IRL? Like, you know, if someone was yelling nasty things to me on the street, would I engage them? Probably not. I'd probably just ignore them. So that's what I would choose to do online. If it got, you know, if it reached a fever pitch and was hindering, you know, the way that I conduct myself or work or live online, then I might take a look at, okay, how do I want to respond, but would I lash out irrationally? Well, not if I wouldn't do it in real life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they say that social media mirrors our actual lives, and I think that's true.
But I also think it gives us a chance to be a little more aggressive than we'd normally be. I've probably been that person. I don't think trolling myself, but my, you know, there are times where you think, would you say exactly this, or would you be more polite in direct, in IRL, in real life? And you know, so here's an example. My beloved Cleveland Indians start the ALCS at home tonight against Toronto, mm-hmm. and the Cleveland Plain Dealers baseball writer has blocked me on Twitter. Now, I don't know why. I don't think I have trolled him. I'm occasionally critical of either bad writing or sort of lazy journalism, and I think that abounds in sports writing, and I think that's to the detriment of publications that haven't sort of modernized their understanding and who they hire. And maybe I've said as much. I try not to do it in a rude way. I try to do it in a substantive way. But he didn't like it at some point, and I am blocked from the Cleveland Plain Dealers baseball writer during my Tribes playoff run. So maybe I have crossed a line. I mean, but I also think sometimes the question of when to block is an interesting one. And I have blocked people. I reserve it for when I think there is no productive discussion with you anymore. I have tried. You have been a little rough or vicious with me. But as Aaron says, I've tried to at least come in and say, okay, it's a real person. Let's try to work this out. And if that's not doable, and it's not productive and you're flooding a stream, then I'm willing to block, but only at that point. And I don't think I ever got that way with the writer in question, but maybe he's more of a sensitive blocker. So, Ro, well, I'll start with you. When do we block?
Well, so what's interesting was I, until very recently, was social media manager at Bon Appetit magazine, and we had our Facebook pages about 1.3 million at the time. So that's a lot of voices in a conversation. And my rule there was I would never block anyone for a dissenting opinion. I would never block anyone for just criticizing Bon Appetit. I know you're thinking, how can things get heated over at a recipe page?
Oh no. In the food world, I believe it.
But, you know, I would never block someone just for being argumentative. It was when speech was hateful or racist or misogynistic or, you know, attacking or vicious in nature. That's when I would block someone. Because there's, you know what, it's like you're in my house. I don't want that kind of talk in my house.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Even insulting stuff to me, you can insult my work as long as you don't insult me personally. Because I take it if you think, if someone writes to me on Twitter and says, Evan, you are a terrible talk show host. You're a bad journalist. You're a bad writer. I can deal with it. I can say, why do you feel that way? Let's have a discussion. And maybe I can learn something from you. Maybe I can improve. But if it's personally insulting or if it crosses certain lines of insults, that's one thing. Aaron, where's the block button? Where's the block line for you?
Well, on a personal level, I think it's interesting. I take it case by case. But what ends up happening when we block people or when we choose not to see certain content, we only see what supports our existing viewpoint, right? And so then we create this whole system where everything we post is supported by the people in our networks, right?
We create our own bubbles.
We absolutely do. And, you know, I don't want to get too political here, but you definitely see this on Facebook, right? I mean, I posted something the other day and I thought, oh, there will be a couple people that disagree with what I say. Sometimes I do it to experiment too. And absolutely, everyone just supported exactly what I said. And I said, oh, okay, that's because I'm not friends with or I stopped following people that disagree with my political beliefs. But that supports us in real life, too. I mean, we tend to be friends with people that have similar views and backgrounds as us.
But that's interesting. The point is, you know, Facebook is where you are. Now, look, if you've got 1,000 Facebook friends, I'm not sure you've even met half of them. But the bottom line is that's a little different than Twitter, where people can just follow you. And what you're saying is when you block someone, there better be a good reason, because you're risking putting yourself more in a bubble.
Yeah, I'd agree. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say also that's more important for people in say your profession or professions adjacent to yours, Evan, than say the average bear who just wants to check out what their friends are saying on Twitter.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, but I think if we're all trying to engage in a conversation, I think at least we should think about what it means when we block someone. And that's why I rarely do it. Now, I have done it, and in recent weeks I've done it a lot more than I have done it probably in the past 3 years combined. It is weird times in this country, guys. Weird times. But I try not to block. So Leah Stacey, for you, where's the block line for you?
I'm with Aaron on the case-by-case basis. I wear a lot of hats in this community, and every hat that I put on, the city starts to feel smaller and smaller. I know probably everyone around this table and Rochelle can relate to that. It's a wonderful community, but sometimes you are in a position where you can't make everyone happy. And so I find that I keep choosing jobs that tend to make some people raise an eyebrow when I have an opinion. And sometimes people expect that journalists or professors won't have opinions, but of course we do. We're people. And so I have been trolled recently by a few people, and I haven't blocked them. In fact, one case that I will share with you and keep it as anonymous as possible is that I had written something about someone. It was my job to write about them. And they didn't like what I wrote about them. And so they proceeded to follow me on all of my social media outlets and to like everything that I had posted on Instagram for the last month, to go through and favorite all of my tweets that were related to the subject I wrote about in their context, to try to friend me on Facebook.
Wait, so they're liking this stuff? That doesn't sound like trolling.
Yeah, and then had written some nasty comments on the actual article. But it was almost this like, hey, hey, I'm here. I'm still here. Hey, 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 it's me.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, I'm that's me in your window. So there was that situation was really odd. And I just ignored it. I didn't block the person. I didn't respond to it, and it eventually went away after about a month or 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Eggs. just block those. No.
This hour is becoming quickly anti-egg, which is unfair. There's some great eggs out there. Great eggs.
If you're listening, please get a profile picture.
Yeah. exactly.
Yeah. Well,
even if it's of an actual egg.
Yeah. Just something.
Please, that. Hold just
not like... So meta.
Very meta. Good.
No, I agree with Rochelle and Aaron and Leah, actually. Like, case by case, I think,
actually.
Is really... Yeah. Sorry.
Actually was an interesting thing.
Weird.
Sorry. But I agree, like, case by case. If you have, like, recurring hatred, I guess, like, on any of my personal accounts, I would probably block if that. With accounts that I manage, it's always a different story. Those are the ones that you usually get, like, spam more often than probably hatred, at least the ones that I... run and whatnot, but mm-hmm. so yeah, no, I agree with what they said.
Well, one of the ways to disarm though is to give ground when you're really tangling with somebody and mm-hmm. they score a point in an argument, give it to them. Mm-hmm. You know, people think mm-hmm. that nobody will ever give ground, and I find it disarming to do that.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who follows me on Twitter, I've been tangling with a few people this morning about the political things. You know, nothing more than just the how people should govern and whether they should have different public and private positions and all those things. But I had to give some ground when people were making some good points with context. And I think when you do that, it at least says, I respect you and I am listening, that this isn't just about shouting you down. And too often, I think that's where sort of it meanders to. Let's get our only break of the hour, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the other subjects that the Upstate Social Sessions are going to be covering. This is the second annual, guys? Is that the
second?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, time flies. So second annual, Leah Stacey and Steve Carter are conference organizers for the Upstate Social Sessions. Aaron Roselle, who's a visiting assistant professor at St. John Fisher College, will be there. Rochelle Bylow, who's a social media manager now for Pinkney Hugo, she's going to be there tomorrow. And it is from roughly 9 to 5, registration and breakfast at 9 o'clock. It's at School of the Arts. You can get tickets now where, Steve?
UpstateSocialSessions.com.
Okay, and that's how you get involved. Let's get our only break of the hour and come back and hit some of the other subjects they'll be hitting next. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to the creators of the new play, Church and State. It's a play about religion and guns. A fictional play set in a time just like now, in a place a lot like Sandy Hook. There's a school shooting. 29 people die. How is the senator running for re-election impacted in his view of God and guns? That's at the center of this play, and we'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I'm mildly offended because I just noticed that if you're one of the VIPs going to the social sessions, they give you something that we give during pledge, which is a tote bag. You cannot offer a tote bag and come on public radio. There's only one tote bag. It's the WXXI tote bag.
There's a Twitter account for
that.
This is
so awkward.
This is really... Our tote bag, which, by the way, used to have its own social media account, as Leah knows, is a very big deal. But there's all kinds of ways that we say thank you. And Randy Gorbin is here to thank all of the people listening right now who have already become members, but to ask you that if you are not, we need you right now.
And you know, it's in my contract. I don't talk about tote bags.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'll talk about anything else.
Tote bags are like Fight Club.
We won't even go there. But honestly, let you talk about the premiums, but public radio, public broadcasting, I was just thinking, listening to your show this hour, about all the effort, Evan, we put in terms of not only social media, but our whole really digital transformation. You know, as you know, it's been a very massive sea change. We can talk about that for many topics in terms of what has happened to traditional media And we are still trying to provide great content, but doing that on multiple platforms. And that all takes money. It takes resources. And that's why we do pledge weeks like this every so often. You can make a contribution, show your support, and be part of the conversation by dialing 454-6300. That's 454-6300. Out of the area, 1-800-295-9994. 1-800-295-9994. And a lot of folks, of course, listen to us online. You can do that through your mobile app. You can make the donation on your mobile app. Also, you can do it just by going to the WXXI website, wxxi.org/give. And we do need that kind of support to continue the kind of transformation that is going on in our business and what you're talking about right now.
Huge week for us. We need you. Thank you, Randy Grobman, news director from WXXI News. I see some comments on Twitter. I'll mention as well, if you want to call the program, it's toll free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'd like to hear from you in terms of, you know, I know there's a lot of negativity about social media, whether it's from Louis C.K. all the way down to people who get tired of seeing younger people on their phones all the time and some of the stereotypes out there. How do you manage it in a way that's productive for you? Maybe you've started and you've quit. And are you somebody who's thought about quitting Facebook? Do you use Twitter? Is it effective for you? I actually find Twitter to be very, very effective for news gathering and seeing news, but you have to still understand and kind of contextualize it. And I find it to be a very useful tool to engage with the audience, too. We use it every day on this talk show, and I use it every day just to communicate with listeners and people in the community, because ultimately it's not just about one host and one microphone talking. So with that said, let me kick it back to our guests who are here talking about Upstate Social Sessions, which is tomorrow in Rochester, the second annual, and ask them about this. One of your sessions is with my colleague Helene B. and Duty Hofer. It's called Opinions Are My Own, Speaking Out on Social Media. Speaking of opinions are my own, it's only Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's own opinion on Twitter if they actually put their initials on it. Is that okay with you, Leah, to have staffs tweeting under somebody else's account?
Well, I appreciate that they put the initials. I have to say that I'm okay with it because I think this is what we know from politicians, well, from politicians who are this busy. And I like the, I guess, the honesty that comes with signing their initials. But then it does make me wonder about the reporting that gets picked up that uses tweets that are not signed with their initials.
Right, so like Hillary Clinton said X on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, we know Donald Trump is always tweeting, but Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are not unless they're putting their initials as an example. And that's true for a lot of politicians, for example. And that becomes dicey.
Well, yeah, because we've all worked in jobs with coworkers and done the, and Steve knows what I'm going to say. I wonder about who's at the controls. I mean, you always hear these stories about the intern who tweeted the wrong thing and is now gone.
Now that's like the insult. Everyone's like, oh, your intern's tweeting.
Yeah, which is so awful for my students, to be quite honest. Yeah, and so, you know, I want my students to be these interns, but, you know, the good ones. And then I want them to go and get jobs like this. But that puts so much responsibility on someone who is very young.
Mm. Yeah, and Steve, how do you feel about that?
I mean, if anybody wants to take over my Twitter account and run it, I will sign my initials when it's actually me. But no, that's a serious offer. I think it is okay, like, that they do that. I mean, it's a very, like, if you're running the country, you can't be on Twitter all the time. And that's something that, like, if Donald Trump's running the country, will he be on Twitter all the time?
I think the answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we don't need to know all that. So, I don't know. I think it is okay to have a team. Having interns with that kind of level of control, I don't know about that. And it's easy to make them the fall for a mistake. But I mean, it's especially with a public figure that's very important. I think you need to have like a solid strategy and solid people running that.
Sure, Aaron, what do you think?
I think it's a natural extension of a PR strategy, and if they're transparent about it, so we know that Hillary writes the tweets that are signed with an H. Okay, I know that actually came from her, and the rest I can say, well, that was created content by her social media staff. So I think it's no different than, having someone else write your speech, which, we know happens all the time. That's part of a PR job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rochelle?
Well, so I can't help but call to mind, there's this one tweet a few months ago. It's surprising Donald Trump had said something inflammatory and bizarre, and Hillary Clinton's account tweeted back at him and said, delete your account, which is, you know, a really funny social media meme, like, oh, delete your account. Stop. And everyone was like, oh, my God, Hillary Clinton's such a millennial. She's so funny. She's so hilarious. Of course, that wasn't her. That was her social media staff. Right. Those of us in the biz know that. But I'm curious about, you know, again, the average person who doesn't spend their day on TweetDeck like the rest of us. Do they have that awareness that she wasn't the one who wrote that? Does it matter? Probably not.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Well, I want to grab a couple of your phone calls. So I'm going to start in the city of Rochester. This is Jason. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening to the conversation. I run a really successful reggae band in town, and I do all the social media. And it's interesting that even on my personal account, a lot of people can get confrontational and probably say things they wouldn't normally say if they were face-to-face. And that's this dark side of social media. It gives people a way to kind of be a keyboard warrior. And I thought message boards were bad in the 90s, but now it's just so out of hand. And in some cases, I will defriend people because the kind of rhetoric that's just spewed out. I mean, we're such a country that's been divided racially and politically now, and I think this social media is kind of deepening that chasm. And I'm not sure how you guys feel about that, but it's almost becoming like a cesspool. It's just unbelievable. And it seems like it gets worse as time goes on.
There's a really good piece of advice that I was given, and I like to give to students sometimes, about email, actually, in the office. When you get an email that really kind of upsets you, wait 5 minutes before you respond, because your initial inclination might be to send something that it turns out not so good. And I think there is a proclivity to go toward the negative sometimes in social media because, frankly, it's easier. Sometimes it takes a little bit more to be positive about things.
I've done it many times, yeah, and I never feel good about it, and it's not productive, to your point.
No.
Yeah.
Well, if you're running a business, in my case, and it's very important that the negative stuff doesn't show because, you know, when you banter back and forth, you're opening yourself up to a fight. And I learned a long time ago, and this is my word of advice for anybody because I'm a little older and I was a message board junkie back in the day and still kind of am, that arguing on the internet will never change anything. It doesn't lead to resolutions half the time. It doesn't solve anything. And it surprises me how many people don't get that concept. Nothing's wrong with freedom of speech or being able to say what you want, but it's amazing to me. I mean, I'm not on social media every day, but I have to handle it for shows and for the media and everything else like that. But it's really too bad. And I don't see it getting any better. And I'm sorry to be negative, but it's interesting that you guys are talking about this now because we were talking about this at the U of R where I work, you know, for our department page. It's just, it's interesting what things have become, I suppose.
Well, Jason, I appreciate that. I wonder if Leah and Steve, who put together this conference, the Upstate Sessions, along with Danielle, I know there's other credit as well, but as organizers, are we reaching the point now where in our basic education, we talk about media literacy? Do we need media literacy? Do we need classes as early as middle school or high school to talk about, you know, just basic? I mean, why is everyone laughing?
Because we're like, yes.
Yeah. Oh. I think Aaron and I have actually had this conversation. I mean, we get together and we talk. We teach a lot of the same subjects. We talk about this, just how we want our students to be really, really aware of how they are on the internet, how other people are. Yeah, absolutely. It would be wonderful if we started talking about this stuff before we get them as sophomores or juniors in college.
Mm-hmm. Erin?
Absolutely. I was working with some of my students to try to put together a media literacy program for high school students. But I think it even needs to start younger than that. I mean, kids are using social media at a younger and younger age. Mm-hmm. And you need to understand how to use it and the repercussions of using it, and how to use each platform differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rochelle?
I have a good rule of thumb that I try and remember. I can't say that I remember all the time. But for me, in my personal use of social media, which, of course, you know, again, is different from managing a brand or an organization's social media, but in my personal use, I follow and engage with the people that I love in my life and people who inspire me. Anything beyond that is stalking. Don't stalk. Like, that's the barometer, right? Because otherwise you'll just exist completely in social media and you won't exist in the real world, which I think is something that kids these days are maybe finding a little challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let me get back to your phone calls as well. I'm seeing a ton of comments come in also on Twitter and email. So, and some of them critiquing me, too, by the way, which is fine. I sort of opened the door, which is absolutely fine. It's totally good.
But not your personality, just your...
Well, yeah. Some people probably find me insufferable, and that's totally understandable. I can absolutely relate.
Only professional critique.
Let me get back to the phones. So Bob in Rochester. Next up. Go ahead, Bob.
Hello there. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The comment that I had was, I would like to know, and I'm not kidding, from your guests, why all social media should not be banned. And that's the way it is. It's not a good answer. You get unrestricted communication from people of unknown educational, ethnic, religious, and other bents and backgrounds. And they are all given essentially equal credence. Why should that be permissible? Why is that productive? And why is that not harmful to society in general?
Hey, Bob, well, let's start with this. If you had a town square and a bunch of people were hanging out downtown, they all got coffee, would you ever say, whoa, we got people from different racial backgrounds?
I could walk up to them and get to know them and find out what their background was.
Okay, but you think the government should put a rule on not allowing?
I didn't say anything about government. I did not use that word.
Oh, okay, but okay. I'm trying to hang with you and follow along with if we were going to quote unquote ban it, or you say why should it be allowed? The implication is it would have to be banned in some way. So banned by whom?
I think people can have sufficient control over their own lives to ban things.
Okay, all right. So
simply discontinue the use of social media, other than obviously for traditional commercial purposes, not including advertising.
Okay.
And similar purposes, the way the internet began, which was a scientific and educational means of discourse, that's fine.
Okay. So, in other words, in this kind of thought experiment, it wouldn't be banned by the government, but in general, the society would say this is not a good use, and this is not a productive or safe or
no,
a good
no.
way.
I would go further. I would say this is a destructive use.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Mm. All right. So stay there. And Rochelle, I heard you humming there. So Bob, stay there. And I appreciate this. Go ahead, Rochelle. You start.
Well, so my thought on that, Bob, is, you know, I think you're right. There are some terrible, destructive, awful, upsetting things that happen on social media. But there are also inspiring and creative and hilarious, laugh-out-loud, heartwarming things that happen on social media, too. And I don't want to miss those, and I don't want to cut myself off from those just so I can stay safe from the negative things. And I think that's reflective of real life, too. There are terrible things in real life, and there are beautiful things in real life, just like social media.
All right,
there is a significant difference. The significant difference is that in what you call real life, you have the opportunity to vet the speaker, the person who's articulating a principle or an idea. You know their background or can know their background. You can know their religion. You can know their educational level. You can know their knowledge level of the issue about which you're discussing. All you have to do is look at today's political discourse. Most of it comes from ignorance. And you get that manifold on social media.
Okay, so hang in there, Bob, because there's a couple other things I'd like to explore with you, but I want to let the panelists
sure.
in studio respond as well to this.
Is there a certain social media channel that you're referring to?
No, I'm not. The concept of social media in and of itself, other than for educational, scientific, and true commercial purposes, should be... within the purview of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like Rochelle said, I mean, there's a lot of negative things on social media, but at the same time, there's so many positive things. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for social media, like in this room. The conference wouldn't exist. My job wouldn't exist. The things that I've been able to do, I probably wouldn't be in Rochester if it wasn't for social media, actually. So there's...
Well, some of what you say is true. Some of what you say is not true. The conference could exist just fine without social media, but for the subject matter. But conferences could exist just fine without social media.
Okay. Leah, do you want to respond as well?
Well, I'm curious if you're on social media at all.
Not by design, not.
No, so not by design.
Okay.
So not at all?
Not anymore, no.
Okay.
I think that kind of brings up a point, which is you can choose whether
exactly.
or not to participate in social media. So if you don't like what's going on there, you don't like the content, you don't like the tone, you don't have to participate in it. Just as if you don't like a particular newspaper or television show, you don't have to turn on the TV, you don't have to read the newspaper. You don't have to participate in social media either.
Sure. And,
it's not about not participating. It's about the dissemination of wholly inaccurate information and foundationless views on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I guess, Bob, I would say this notion of an ignorant populace didn't start with Twitter.
Of course not.
And I agree with you that it is a big problem, that most people can't name who is on their school board. People complain about government all the time, and then if you ask them, who's on your school board? Who's on your city council? Who's on, who are your state reps? A lot of people don't know, and that ignorance is not new to social media. I do agree that ignorant ideas can travel very quickly, and I think that there is some danger there, but ignorant ideas can also be met with, at least, and dealt with pretty quickly at times. I would also say that the idea of, we were talking about trolls online, but let me give you a real-life troll. The Westboro Baptist Church are real-life trolls. They are the people who march at soldiers' funerals and say that God loves IEDs, God hates your soldiers. They go to funerals for people who died of AIDS and says, God loves AIDS, God hates fags. That's what they write, things like that. I mean, it is horrible, horrible stuff. The story of Megan Phelps Roper is a story of how Twitter actually got her to stop trolling in real life. She met people when she started representing Westboro Baptist Church on Twitter. And if you want to go to The New Yorker, they wrote an incredible piece called Unfollow. And you should read it. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how she made real human connections with people who said, you know, you're a vicious, vicious, anti-gay, terrible person. But you also seem like, you know, maybe there's some nice goodness in you and sort of normalcy behind that facade. Maybe that's a facade. And they started this relationship, and it broke her down to see that people aren't all just sort of vessels of either hate or pure goodness or pure evil. And she quit the church. It's really an amazing story. Mm-hmm. Steve, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, again, like, that's an example of humanizing it, like taking it and showing that you're human and trying to take it offline or take it through a different channel, through private messaging. Like, there's other ways. You don't have to do everything publicly. So I think
that is, as they say, the exception that proves the rule. If you have to go offline in order to have an intelligent, thoughtful, informed dialogue about something, then the line you were on shouldn't exist.
Bob, I want to thank you for the phone call, because I think you've offered some provocative ideas here, and I think it's really valuable. So first of all, thank you for the phone call. Second of all, I think we would be lying if we didn't all say at some point, I would be happier if I just cut Facebook out of my life, if we cut certain things out. Because like anything, you can overdo it. And I think part of media literacy should probably involve ideas of basic human etiquette. People are justifiably frustrated when all the people in their group are on a phone instead of having a conversation. I think that's fair. I also think that's a bit of a caricature, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. So, Aaron, how do you feel about that?
I would not be happier if I cut Facebook out of my life, to tell you the truth, because I use it to keep in touch with friends and family that are not local and to know what's going on in their lives. I think if you know what you're using each platform for and you have a good idea of how often you should use it as to not get sucked in, then it provides a really valuable resource. I'll also say social media is great for information gathering. I mean, the caller and the story that you just told, I'm wondering if you read about that story because you saw it initially shared on Twitter.
I don't know, but I suspect I did.
Yeah. So I use Twitter as an information gathering source, not really to network with friends or to make new friends. It's not about building relationships for me. But Facebook is. That's how I keep in touch with people that I've known since I was a little girl.
Well, let me also follow up to Bob's point there. His biggest frustration was the dissemination of inaccurate information, potentially harmful information, that does travel quickly. So let me ask all of you, is that concern, I think the concern is valid, but then the question is what happens on social media, and is it policed enough? Does Twitter need to do more policing? Is it our job as a populace in general? Leah, I'll start with you.
Well, this question has been brought up so many times. Should Twitter police? Should Facebook police? do we want them to, quite frankly? I think that there are community guidelines that they've put into place, and I think that those are there for a reason. And from there, I think it's up to community managers to run these accounts for organizations, for businesses. I think that it's really important that everybody has a social media handbook or guidelines of some sort when they are an organization, business, publication. And I think for us personally, you know, I talk to my students about this too, and we all agree that when you are on social media too much, you get this feeling of like eating too many sweets. Do you know what I mean? Where you just kind of feel sick and like over it. Like what was once a wonderful thing is now kind of a terrible thing. And in my social media class, they actually do 24 hours off all social media. And then they have to write about it. And they have check-in points through the 24 hours, not when they're sleeping. And, you know, it was incredible. They just did this week. It was incredible to hear some of the things that they said afterward. And so I think, yeah, there's sort of these shouting matches that are going on a lot right now. There's echo chambers in certain social platforms. There's a lot of misinformation, a lot of negative information, and we have to really, I mean, part of this conference is to educate people and to inform them on how to handle all of that noise.
Rochelle Bylo, you want to jump in on that too?
I'll just retweet everything that was said.
Yes.
I couldn't put it better myself. Mm-hmm. Well, which is the point of a retweet.
Well,
yes. I love it.
David writes to me on Twitter. He says, Bob is suggesting to shut down the internet as a whole, not just social media.
Oh, God, what will my job be?
Same.
Sarah writes to me and says, Sarah writes, I have a sign in my house that says, don't read the comments. I struggle to follow my own advice. I've taught MS Tech, and my students really struggle to understand the permanency and publicity of their comments. We made progress, but not much. That's from Sarah. I take the point too, Sarah. That's don't read the comments, or sometimes don't read the replies. And all of a sudden, the hour's almost vanished. So here's what we need to do in our last 2 minutes here. Upstate Social Sessions is tomorrow. It's the second annual. And you can still attend upstatesocialsessions.com.
And we actually have a discount code for listeners. If you use WXXI20, you get $20 off ticket price, any level. So
you should use WXXI, all of it. That would be a good, but WXXI20 was,
yes,
$20 off as a list.
Capitals,
I did
caps.
Not know about this. See, I don't coordinate these
We just
things.
Made it just now.
We, internet, we just made it.
Yeah.
Oh, you did? That just happened.
Yeah, we used the internet for that.
Let's see, things are happening. Leah, just real briefly here, I know in our last 90 seconds, there's a lot that we haven't touched on that you're excited about. What's on the list that you're excited about tomorrow?
Oh, man. So a big part of tomorrow's conference is all about social video and analytics. These are two things that are really, really important for conversation. And so we have breakout sessions. That's new tomorrow because we didn't do that last year. And these are going to be a chance to get more face-to-face. We have Neethi, from the New York Times coming. She actually worked at DNC Digital, and she'll be leading a workshop on social video. And then we have someone from Kickstarter coming, Carol, and she's going to be talking about best practices for that. We have styling and shooting for social media from a blog that's based in Western New York. And then we also have Rochelle, who is on the phone with us, and she'll be talking about using social media to boost your personal brand. And so you can hear more about that. Steve is speeding me through these sessions in front
There's
of me.
There's a lot of sessions.
There's a lot, yeah.
So many. Yeah. And then, of course, Don't Feed the Trolls, which Aaron will be moderating. Rochelle will be sitting on that, along with Brian and Carol from Moment and Kickstarter. And they're going to talk more about everything we've talked about in this hour.
And the good stuff, too. So that's like, we talked about a lot about the negative, but there's also good things like growing, fostering a community, and
Absolutely.
Whatnot. So,
yeah, and that's why I brought up the extreme story of Megan Phelps Roper. Mm-hmm. Does Bob saying that's the outlier? Maybe right now it is. Mm-hmm. But if social media can create a real connection with the Westboro Baptist Church, anything is possible. If you think no one will ever change or everything will always be negative, that's the story that proves that's not necessarily true. We just have to be open to other views and opinions. And I hope you guys have a great day. I want to thank Rochelle Bylo, who's been on the phone with us. Thank you, Rochelle. We'll see you in Rochester tomorrow.
See you guys there.
Leah Stacey, Steve Carter, organizers for the conference. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And Aaron Rozelle, who's a visiting assistant professor at St. John Fisher College. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks, Evan.
All right, short break. More Connections is next.